Because Joe's Barn Grill and Bar, Joe puts on these stage shows on the back of the barn. He's really got a lot of courage, you know? Because 2 weeks ago, he put on Ben Hur with the original cast, you know, Francis X. Bushman and Carmel Myers and Ramon Navarro. They all looked pretty good. And everything was fine until the chariot race. And it was a real mess because Joe won't move the bottles or the glasses or anything. And the horses fell down and some of them got loaded, you know? You can't throw a horse out of a bar here in New York. It's just state law. And, but if I skip around when I talk, it's because, you know, I, a few years ago, I had a brain operation. Well, I actually didn't need a brain operation, but I had this credit card. With the Hilton Hotels, you know, carte blanche, which my French teacher told me meant brain operation. And you can have a brain operation in any Hilton hotel in the country. And this, you can have a combination brain operation and breakfast in bed in some hotels, which is kind of nice because breakfast is kind of hard to take anyway. They give you the anesthetic and so on. But anyway, I had this brain operation and it was a little, somehow when they put it, they closed it up, you know, I hear this tapping inside. The nurse got caught inside, you know. And it's all right, I don't really mind this, but she was wearing tap shoes. And every night she auditioned, she figures Ted Mack is going to be here, and she knows. But getting back to this girl. But actually, Joe opened a wonderful play there last night. Joe is the entrepreneur. That's pretty close. Bonsoir means good soup, don't forget that. And Joe put on his play last night by Tennessee Gleckel, who's a new author. Actually, he's not new, he's from Hollywood, he's a movie writer. He's the one that took the Lolita story, you know, and really made a movie story out of it. It was kind of hard to do. Of course, they changed the casting a little bit. Mae West and Roddy McDowell. Gonna play the parts. And Debbie Reynolds is gonna be the nun. Which wasn't in the original book, you know, but nuns are hot right now. That's true. You've either got to be a success in show business, you've got to be a nun, or Chinese, or gay. Or better still, a gay Chinese nun. Better than cans, isn't it? But Tennessee Gleckel's play opened there last night. It's one of those, it's called Toys in the Basement. And it's one of those Southern problem type plays. You know, this guy in the first act, he falls in love with a chandelier. But they can't get married because he can't reach it. So he switches to a girl, which is sort of a novelty in a play, that sort of, anyway. He switches to this girl, loves him, goes crazy about this girl. She has long blonde hair cascading down her back and he thinks it's real. And it is. Her head is fake. Stuffed corduroy. First he thought she was a little old, so he goes back to the chandelier, but the chandelier had nothing to do with him, you know, because he's untrue. So then his luck really changes, and although he never carries more than $50 in cash, somebody steals his traveler's checks. I had to work on that line. But actually, he sort of gives up after a while, and he goes, he must have knocked himself off. Oh, I got to tell you about Tennessee Gleckel's brother, Ralph Gleckel. He was a folk singer in espresso parlors around town here, you know, downtown here. And you know how they all wear the turtleneck sweater so they don't get the guitar rash, you know? Well, he committed suicide about a month ago, and he wanted to do it in a real odd way and get his name in the papers and everything. He did. He took off his turtleneck sweater, and he washed it, and he put it back on wet. And waited. And finally got him. That's a very good joke for an all-Apache audience. But getting back to the other suicide, this guy in the play, Tennessee Gleckel's play, Toys in the Basement, and he wanted to knock himself off, so he went to the Time and Life building, the new one, of course, because he's very chic. And he went up to the 26th floor and got out on the ledge and waited for a big crowd to gather before he jumped. And the cops got there and the fire department and everything, and they couldn't coax him back in. Finally, they sent for his mother, and she went out on the ledge, and she talked very soothingly to him and crept closer and closer. And finally, she got close enough to him, she'd give him a push. And she looks up and says, well, he had to leave the nest sometime. Shh. second act of this play, there's nobody on stage for about 45 minutes. Then comes the high point. The phone rings in the lobby. And then just when everybody turns around to see who's calling, the curtain comes down. Stage writing. The third act starts off a little slow with an Aztec human sacrifice ceremony. And if you've never seen one, no bother with that, and you go down to Mexico City, there's a big pyramid down there. They wanted to figure out something to do with it. Used to use it years ago, you know, and they couldn't make a parking lot out of it because it was too slanty. Well, there's two smart New York characters, restaurant associates, their names are, and they got together and thought of an idea. Every Sunday we'll have these Aztec human sacrifice ceremonies that we used to have in the old days, a real tourist attraction, you know? And some Sundays down there, they'll sacrifice 150 or 200,000 people. They really do. It hasn't been the National Geographic yet. They're a little slow on the news, you know? But you can put the whole thing on the Diners Club. And whatever you do, if you're down there on a Sunday, just don't get in line. I wish you'd all hum Amy. Works at the Waldorf. Am I trying? Oh, boy. Because I have to pick up a pop, you know? I was in Bloomingdale's this afternoon. I went in there to buy a typewriter. And this guy says to me, why don't you buy a drum? So I said, well, I'm a writer. Says anybody can write. Don't you want to march? And he fluttered his eyelids and got mascara all over me. But I did want to march, and I've had the drum for an awful long time, actually about 2 or 3 years, ever since I've lived in New York, and every Sunday when they have a parade, first I lurk, and then I join them as they go by, you know? They don't stop the parade and say, what the hell are you doing here? Of course, sometimes you do get them with the wrong groups, like the D.A.R., you know? But you're not dressed for it. Come to think of it, they aren't either. But on the Sundays they don't have any parades, then it's really embarrassing, because there I'm out on the corner lurking, with the drum hanging on me. I try to act like we're not together. Oh, it's a growth. But the kids are the worst. Like last Sunday, I was out on the corner lurking with the drum hanging on me, and a kid comes up, there was no parade. The kid comes up to me and says, hey, where are the other two guys? Well, I had to tell him they're at the mermaid room. One guy's still playing the flute pretty good, and the other black guy bleeds my funny Valentine. And came out. Jesus. You know, they really sell you at Bloomingdale's. We miss you, Bix. You too, Glenn. And Bunny. And Fats. And B.A. Ralph. And him. You know, someday when I get to be a big actor and work in a bigger cellar, I'm gonna have a guy especially to put the bugle back in the bag. Touching, isn't it? What happened to Amelia Earhart and Judge Crater? Can you show up? And this time, I'd like to sing a little song that was written especially for me by George Gershwin. Just got it in the mail this morning. I don't know where he mails them from, but he belonged to ASCAP to get through. This song is called A Boy's Best Friend Is His Dude. He's drunk with anticipation. A Boy's Best Friend Is His D.O.G. Okay, Peter. A boy's best friend is his D.O.G. and not his C.A.T. That's true, straight shooters. Kind of a suicidal line, isn't it? A boy's best friend is his D.O.G. Whom could take the place of your faithful D.O.G.? Your M.O.T.H.E.R.? Your F-A-T-H-E-R, your friendly neighborhood M-A-D-A-M-E. I'll never forget my old dog, Rover. Rover with your eyes like a misty light. Rover with your nose and... When I first got my old dog, Rover, from the Bidery home, his name wasn't Rover. Mr. Bide had named him Norman Vincent Peale. I was kind of afraid to call him. But he's a wonderful dog, Rover. It's a lousy song, isn't it? They say you should get off with a song. I couldn't get on with this song. He's a wonderful dog, this Rover. It's not much of a plot, but I've forgotten it. How do you like that? Rover was a wonderful dog because he was a mutt. And they're the best kind, your folks keep telling you, because they get them for nothing. And Rover was a real mutt. He was half St. Bernard and half Chihuahua. A sort of a miracle mutt. But you know, straight shooters. Sounds like an invitation, doesn't it? You can be the worst louse to everybody else in the whole wide world. Everybody can hate you and ignore you, spit on you. But to your faithful old dog, it doesn't matter. To your faithful old dog, you're a god. You're Sonny Tufts. So that's why I say, a boy's best friend is his D.O.G. and not his C.A.T. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. I'm writing a new book. It's an autobiography called A Funny Thing Happened to Me on the Way to the Grave. Pretty profound. They say you should always get on for the song, you know, but I can't really find that so. It's the worst damn song in the world, isn't it? Get off on it? Jesus, I couldn't come on with it. I found something in Newsweek. I haven't got a program, so I can't feud with them yet, but... just got on Channel 13, I can say a few things. Now, this is called Advice on Sharks. It's on the science... Oops. Science. On sharks. It says how to avoid them, you know. This is by a guy by the name of Schultz. who, no, this is a guy, his name is Schultz. He's the head of the Sharks. He says, well, maybe he is. Work where you can get it, I guess. These are the pointers. There have been a lot of shark accidents. You know, there was one the other day in off Santa Cruz in California. You know, think you're in paradise, and all of a sudden you come up with one leg. Peg Leg Bakes in Paradise. That's the title of the new album. This is how to avoid sharks. And an interesting picture of a shark, too. I don't know if you can see it. Pull the camera in a little closer. Not a dirty picture, you know. Dirty pictures of sharks. It says, never go swimming alone. Huh? It hits that on the head, doesn't it? Never go into the water with a cut. Blood attracts sharks. Don't thrash about. Either lie still and shout for help, and keep your movements regular. That's actually in the magazine. It really is. Keep your movements regular. Oh, Christ. In other words, you carry a stopwatch with you, see? Get in danger. Years ago, I used to work on the Barbary Coast. I'm a lot older than I look. I used to work in a place there, for a guy named Harry O'Day, his name was. And when the tourists come in, they were the only ones that ever ordered a Manhattan with a cherry in it, you know? And God help you if you drank the cherry, you know, that was the end, especially on the Barbary Coast. So this went on for months and months and months, and one day, one night, I should say, I came to work, and the bartender was crying. Oh, I forgot to tell you the most important thing. The cherry's name was George. They gave him a name. They were fine enough to write it. No, it's true. And one night I came in, the bartender was crying. I said, what happened? He said, somebody ate George. Who's the one with the red light up there? Well, that's our waiter from England. One of the waiters here is from England. He came over here to steal a Jaguar, you know? But actually, he was very famous. He was the first one to swim the English Channel. You know, during the war, and they were having a picnic on the beach at Dunkirk. And something told them to get out of there. Swam all the way to Dover with a cheese sandwich in his mouth. Tomorrow night, we're going to have special guest stars, Judge Trader and Amelia Earhart. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.